Here we go.
So, it's my pleasure to welcome Angelo Druda, author of The Tao of Rejuvenation tonight. Angelo is a practitioner, has been a practitioner of traditional Chinese medicine since 1990, has lectured and practiced in the U.S., Australia, New Zealand, and Europe, is a member of the Australian Natural Therapist Association, the founder of traditional botanical medicine, and the health and sexuality editor for dharmacafe.com. He's a regular contributor to Progressive Radio Network and the Voice of America. We are delighted to welcome him to Many Rivers for the first time tonight. Welcome, Angelo. Thank you.
Good evening, Sebastopol. I get a chair in Sebastopol. This is good. In 1970, 3 days after I graduated from college, I got a letter from the President of the United States. The Vietnam War was raging, and he was inviting me to join the slaughter. He was actually ordering me to join the slaughter, to be exact. And the carefree days of my youth ended when that envelope was opened. I suddenly discovered that I was owned. And my owners wanted me to do some killing work. Well, I'm not going to go into the details of what took place the next 2 years after that. But when I was finally discharged in late 1971, suffice it to say I was a wreck, emotionally, psychically, physically, a wreck. And I had no idea what to do with my life at that point. And a couple of my friends called me up and said, "Hey, why don't you come up to Stone Ridge, New York, on the banks of the Hudson River, and come visit us and come see this amazing place we're renting." And so I did. I drove up, beautiful sunny day, upstate New York. The place was called Swami Cottage. And it had originally been part of a large estate. And as it turns out, this cottage was where Swami Vivekananda had spent a summer in the late 1800s. Some of you know of Vivekananda. Great adept from India. He came over to the West, one of the first from the East to come over and start working with Westerners. And he lived in this cottage for a summer, and he actually did something very radical in that cottage. He initiated a woman, a Western woman, into an Eastern monastic order. This had never been done before. He broke up the all-male club by initiating this woman. And I went, and it was a beautiful cottage. Now, the lease said that you could rent the cottage, but no one was permitted to live in Vivekananda's bedroom. So they used the bedroom for healings. And my buddies, knowing I was not in a good way, suggested that I go and meditate in Vivekananda's bedroom. It had been used when plants got sick, they put the plants in there, and pets got sick, the pets went in there. When people were sick, they went in there. And so I did. I went into Vivekananda's bedroom, a tiny little room, really. There were plants in there. The sun was shining through quite beautifully. I sat down on the floor, and I felt immediately embraced, touched, lifted up in a kind of joyous swoon. And 20 minutes later, when I walked out of that room, I had been restored to my ease. I was relaxed, balanced, happy again in a way that I hadn't felt really in years. Now, on that day, that was the first day I discovered the healing, regenerative potential in consciousness itself. There are two great forces at work in nature. There's the force of degeneration. We all know about that. Everything's eating everything. Bacteria are constantly competing for food sources. Sometimes we're the food source. Everything's breaking down, decaying, ultimately disappearing. It's the force of degeneration. We can't really stop it, but we can slow it if we do the right thing. And then there's this force of regeneration. It's a profound force that I encountered really for the first time, consciously, in Vivekananda's bedroom in Stone Ridge, New York. Now, I suspect all of you in this room here today, we're in Sebastopol, Northern California, a very hip little town. I suspect most everybody here knows that our generation have been the rich kids of the human race. You know that, right? We've had it all. We've had three meals a day. We've had shelter. We've had all the fuel we needed to keep warm and get about. This is unprecedented for human beings, except perhaps the aristocracy and royalty lived like this. But for the most part, common human beings have never had it as good as we have had it. We have been the rich kids of the human race. And as you all know, the party is coming to an end. We're living in a time right now of great crisis. We're living in a time of global warming, the healthcare meltdown. You can't turn on the TV at all 24/7 and not hearing about that. Environmental breakdown. Some more reports came through today about the ice caps. We're living in a time of great crisis. The earth and the human race is suffering from a yang fire imbalance, is what they would call it in Chinese medicine. The Chinese law of aging was traditionally enunciated as the yang consumes the yin. So in other words, the fire of life activity, as we live life and we do all these yang active things, it consumes the deep yin, cooling yin essences of the body. It depletes it over time, and finally, when it is gone, human life is transformed into something else. So the Chinese law of aging, the yang consumes the yin. We are living now in a time where this yang imbalance, like a chronic pattern of inflammation in the body. There's an earth. Al Gore says the earth has got a fever. The earth has this chronic fire imbalance. We are living in this time right now. That being the case, I decided years ago to write the prescription for the times. Because if a patient comes into the clinic and the patient is suffering from chronic inflammation or yang fire imbalance, the doctor will write a prescription and offer a regime that will bring the system back into balance. So I decided to do this. What prompted me to do this, it began in Vivekananda's bedroom, but shortly after I first began to practice Oriental medicine in Melbourne, Australia, years ago, a woman came to me with a chronic condition, chronic lung condition. She had tried everything. That's how it is when you practice alternative medicine. People come to you after they've tried everything else. She came to me with this chronic lung condition. She had used antibiotics. She had done everything. Nothing had worked. And she was lying on my treatment table. And I was there at my desk writing a prescription the way I've been trained to do, trying to look like I actually knew what I was doing in that situation. And almost as an afterthought, I decided to lay hands on her. put my hands on her body and just open up to this great regenerative power that can come and enter into the human experience, just as it had for me in Vivekananda's bedroom years before. I just, as an afterthought, decided to do that with her. And I put my hands on her body, and suddenly her body shuddered. And within 5 minutes, her color returned. The chronic coughing ceased. She had a sudden and dramatic regenerative crisis right on my table. She called me an hour later and said, "What a miracle, what did you do?" To be quite honest, I didn't have the slightest idea what I had done. But I had witnessed the body's profound regenerative chemistry. And what struck me was I had witnessed this regenerative chemistry come to the front at a moment when the body was in its worst condition. In other words, the human body possesses a profound regenerative chemistry, and that potential is there even at our darkest moments. That potential is always there. And on that day, I mean, I was thrilled, but that was the day I decided to become a student of rejuvenation. And I turned to the past, which is where I found the best information. Because I discovered that not only are we the inheritors of a great tradition of spiritual practice, I mean, this bookstore here is dedicated to that tradition, to keeping that tradition alive and making it available. Not only are we the inheritors of a great tradition of spiritual practice, we're also the inheritors of a great tradition relative to bodily rejuvenation. You can look at ancient Taoists. I can't think of any group of people that have considered the matter of bodily regeneration more than the Taoists have. And I found wonderful instruction from the ancient Taoists. The yogis who practiced in the area around Kashmir now, northern India, they developed profound practices relative to bodily rejuvenation. Early Christianity. Who here has read the Essene Gospel of Peace? Yeah. The original manuscript is in the Vatican Library, locked up. There are some people that think this is actually Jesus instructing his disciples in the matter of rejuvenation. Now, obviously, the Vatican must suspect that might be the case, too. They've got it locked up in their library. And then, of course, there is the tradition of Oriental medicine. It comes from India, Tibet, China. All of these traditions had people who specialized in rejuvenation, bodily regeneration. All of these traditions did actually very, very well at a time when there was no high-tech medical safety net. In those days, you either got it right or you were dead at 40, which was the age the average Chinese peasant died, around the age of 40. For the most part, people worked themselves to death. We have managed to cut into that. Although as Americans, we're only averaging 8 vacation days a year, and the Europeans have got 6 weeks. So, and all of these things have a profound impact on health and longevity. I turned to all of these traditions. I included some of the things that I have learned over the years of practicing Oriental medicine. And I also included some of the work of the great spiritual master and great healing master, Adidasa Maharaj. I say great healing master because I have to say some of the most profound and interesting healings that I have ever witnessed were in his company. And Adidasa Maharaj was profoundly interested in this matter of bodily regeneration and bodily rejuvenation. He studied it and periodically had medical doctors and Oriental doctors coming in, experts in kaya kalpa, the Indian practice of bodily rejuvenation that is used to be handed down from teacher to disciple, a secret practice of bodily rejuvenation. He studied all of that material over the course of his lifetime because he said he wanted his students to live a long and healthy life because there was going to be so much work that needed to be done at this time in history. He had warned us that his own incarnation would most likely be rather brief, but he wanted his students to live a long and healthy life in order to serve during this time of crisis. And that's pretty much why I wrote the Tao of Rejuvenation. I went to the tradition and took out all of these key principles and put them in one place where a modern reader could read them and understand them and relate to them and make use of them. And this, I hope, is the kind of people I wrote this book for. I think it is. My point of view right now, as I look at the purification crisis that the world is now entering into, is that people of goodwill everywhere, yes, you have to live a long and healthy life now in order to serve during this time of crisis. So I wrote the Tao of Rejuvenation. And I hope you'll check it out and pick it up here from our friends at Many Rivers tonight. It was Adidasam Raj who summarized all of these great ancient teachings on bodily regeneration. Basically said, if you look at all those teachings, it fundamentally comes down to a three-part process. And much of the Tao of Rejuvenation is structured around this three-part process. He said it all comes down to purification, rebalancing, and rejuvenation. You can look at all of the teachings of the ancients. You can look at all of the modern miracles that are taking place today in medicine, for example. It all comes down to purification, rebalancing, rejuvenation. Purification pertains to the blood. Rebalancing pertains to the nervous system, the autonomic nervous system. Regeneration pertains to the endocrine system. And if you look at the ancient traditions, you see that within these three phases, certain traditions developed elaborate and detailed processes to magnify the effect in each one of those phases. For example, purification, you can basically look at Western naturopathy. The whole system of Western naturopathy was based on the observation that the body regenerates itself when the blood is purified. The whole system is an elaboration of that one fundamental insight. Rebalancing. Interesting fact, now we have determined nowadays through scientific inquiry that every living heart comes with a pre-programmed amount of beats. So for example, the human heart gets several billion beats, and then when you use up those several billion beats, it stops. And human life disappears and we transform into something else. Well, you go back to the yogis of northern India. This is something that science has just discovered in the last 5 years. Go back to the yogis of northern India. They knew this thousands of years ago. So much of their practice of rejuvenation was founded on the principle of slowing the heart rate. And how did they do it? Anybody know who's been studying some of the books on these shelves here?
Meditation.
Meditation. Breathing exercises. They came up with more efficient ways to breathe. And they would teach students these efficient, more efficient ways to breathe. Oxygenate the blood more efficiently. Eliminate that carbon dioxide more effectively. Heart rate, respiratory rate can slow down. Because you're doing more work of oxygenation with less breathing. The heart rate slows down. This is why, when I was a kid, I used to hear these stories about yogis being entombed. And I was always very fascinated by this stuff. And this is what it was about. They would slow their heart rate. Paramahansa Yogananda of the Self-Realization Fellowship, I'm sure his books are here. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Swami Rama, do you have stuff from Swami Rama, the founder of the Himalayan Institute? Two yogis that came over from India. They went into the laboratory and showed scientists. They hooked them up to the machines. They showed them how they slowed their heart rate just at will. Just slowed it right down. So this is practices that pertain to this matter of rebalancing of the autonomic nervous system. In the area of regeneration and the endocrine system, I have to say, nobody got into it like the Chinese. And I see we have some interesting samples here on the shelf. Chinese went out into nature and just discovered all of these substances that were endocrine fuels, hormonal precursors, plant, animal, mineral life. They went out and tested all of these things on themselves. Some of them died. You eat the wrong plant, it's over. This work has been done for us. Fortunately, none of us have to die now. We know what to eat, what not to eat. We know combinations. It's the Chinese that really developed this whole matter of endocrine elixirs. Certainly, Ayurvedic doctors in India and Tibetan doctors also had explored this whole matter of elixirs from the earth. These Eastern doctors have developed profound combinations and discovered powerful elixirs from the earth. I lay all of this out in the Tao of Rejuvenation in detail. And I tell the stories of seeing these principles enacted and effective in life. So that's what I've done. That's why I'm here tonight. That's my little opening spiel. I'm hoping this will be more of a conversation than a lecture. So hopefully there's something on your minds tonight, questions, comments, something you want to talk about. And if that's the case, then now's the moment to let me know what you're thinking.
Well, my topic is menopause. I found it to be the great unmasking of it's just shown me everything I don't need. And today is my third day off.
Your third day
off coffee.
Your third day off coffee.
And it's been I've had since I was 13.
You've been drinking coffee since 13.
Little secret there for you.
Fast-moving woman, I can see.
Alcohol left almost a couple of years ago now. I've decided to kick out refined carbohydrates. Yesterday I Googled salt and sugar abstinence, and what I came up with would made me ask myself, is there anything left to eat? I walked through the grocery store later, and I looked around, and there was nothing to eat except what was on the perimeter of the, you know, the vegetables and fruit. And my question is,
what can I eat?
Not what, well, that, but like, am I gonna? You know, now I'm reaching for all these supplements, and how long will I? My heart rate was already low, and I think that's why I was drinking coffee.
Right.
I went to the emergency room last year because my heart rate was like 45, 40. It was like that, and it's usually about 50 beats a minute. So anyway, I'm throwing a lot at you, and I feel like I'm at a precipice in my life. And I don't want to hurt myself with a lot of supplements.
So is there a question there, or you're just commiserating with us here
in
menopause? Well, you know what the Chinese say about menopause? They say it's a highly positive event because the body has been using the deeper yin essences to create a period every month for the sake of reproduction. But at a certain point, the yin levels of the body start to get low. As I mentioned, the yang consumes the yin. The body reads that yin depletion and turns off the period for the sake of longevity. It says we no longer want to use these essences for the sake of reproduction. Let's turn it off, seal these essences in for the sake of longevity. So they saw it as a wholly positive event. But here in the West, particularly with that book that came out in the 60s, Forever Young, which was a marketing scam for hormone replacement therapy, it was sold to Western women that menopause was some kind of a disease and some kind of problem. And then because we're such a physically based society, everybody thinks the way to go is to remain a perpetual teenager. And so you can always sell that to people too, you know. I just want to just feel like I'm a teenager. But Taoists, one of the great virtues of Taoism is this whole concept of harmonizing. Harmonize with the stage of life that we're in. Harmonize with the season. You harmonize. Don't go to war with the body. Don't go to war with the changes that are taking place at any particular stage of life. Harmonize. And that's where the regenerative chemistry of the body is magnified. So I know when it first begins, I've treated a lot of women. I've specialized in women's health for many years, both here and in Australia. I know when it first begins, it's quite intense. It's a little bit slower for men. Kind of catches you about 56, 57. You start getting the reality consideration that you're not this jock stud anymore. There's a whole new phase beginning. You harmonize with those phases and don't go to war with the body. So, yeah, and supplementation. The whole principle of supplementation is try and find substances that will replace what life has taken out of the body. And you have a choice. You can use manufactured substances, or you can find the substances in their naturally occurring form. You probably have guessed correctly, I'm on the naturally occurring side of things. I'm not saying we never use manufactured drugs, but you know, I like to begin with naturally occurring substances. So if you get your supplementation correct, and it doesn't have to be massive. I know, I'm like that. If I'm taking too many things, I'm convinced I'm sick. You know? You got like a tray full of pills, God, I must really be messed up. And you're giving that message to the body, you know? But if you do find what's needed and take the right things, then this will be an absolutely wonderful stage of life. And you know, they're finding out now all these guys that are injecting human growth hormone, you know, trying to remain perpetual teenagers, it's not translating out into longevity. They're not living longer. They're actually trading some years on the end to feel like a teenager for a little while longer. And so if you just allow the phases, supplement properly, life will be good. And you can live a long and happy life. By the way, relative to caffeine, the studies that came out last year on caffeine turned out that people using caffeine were actually living a little bit longer than people who weren't. An interesting result. Although there are every year several thousand cases where caffeine is implicated in heart problems by increasing the heart rate. But it seems like people just use a little bit of caffeine over time. And my take on that is that the caffeine actually opens up the circulatory system and moves things along and prevents obstructive diseases to a certain degree. So, but if you were drinking coffee since age 13, it's probably good to take a break.
follow instructions. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Your experiences of the regenerative energies, both in the Swami's bedroom and on the table with your patient, were interesting to me. Do you discuss using those energies in your book? And could you give us a little bit of information about that?
In ancient Taoism, they had three kinds of people. They rated people according to their practice of regeneration. They had a third stage type of person. I talk about this in the book. Third stage people, they said, they practiced right life, right livelihood. In other words, you made a service contribution during your day. You're not a mercenary. Right livelihood, we know what that means. And they used herbs and elixirs from the earth. And they said, in other words, they would live a decent life, and they used these elixirs from the earth. And they said these people lived long and healthy lives. Then they had what they called the second stage people. And the second stage people did all those things that the third stage people do, but they practiced what they called esoteric techniques. In my tradition, it's called conductivity practices. In the East, you hear about practices like Qigong, Tai Chi, the yoga practices, pranayama, these kinds of practices. It's all about tapping into the subtler forces that surround and nurture the body. Now, if you walked into the Many Rivers bookstore tonight, I'm presuming you know there's more than just the meat. There is the physical body. The physical body is surrounded by an etheric envelope, and subtler than the etheric is causal dimension of existence, and ultimately the light itself that's manifesting as all of us here tonight. So the second grade practitioners understood that, well, okay, diet is not just having a good lunch. Diet is like learning to receive and draw on these subtler forms of nourishment, principal food. And my spiritual master, Adi Dasam Raj, always used to say, the best diet is the transcendental diet. That's the healthiest diet. Yeah, eat well, eat your greens, eat your vegetables, but learn how to receive and conduct the transcendental light itself. And a lot of the stories that I tell in the book are like that. There's a wonderful story I have in the book comes from Lourdes, you know, the fountain at Lourdes where they have all these extraordinary healings. A lumberjack who had his leg destroyed and it was infected, and he refused to have it amputated, and he jumps into the water at Lourdes, comes out 5 minutes later, he's completely healed. What's beautiful about this story, the man was under a doctor's care for 25 years. The doctor documented the whole thing, including the autopsy when he died 20 years later after this healing. And the autopsy showed all this new bone had been instantly regenerated in the fountain. Well, I look at that as an example of a faith healing. I mean, he somehow or other, he opened up through his faith to that great healing force that intervened in my life in the Swami's bedroom. And it elicited a response of his body's regenerative chemistry that was dramatic. I mean, in order for bone tissue, and they knew it was new because it was whiter than the rest of the bone in his body, in order for the body to regenerate bone like that, there has to be a tremendous response of growth hormone. And it's all documented. So these second stage practices, yeah, the yoga practices, the practices of conductivity, or as simple as just the practice of loving service, where you just give yourself over to the service of others. All these are Tai Chi, Qigong, meditation. They're all forms of learning how to draw on the forces that are subtler and ultimately greater than the physical body. And in many ways, the book is really founded on that principle. I mean, I really do get into it. It's just very much a part of the consideration there.
And that's the second level.
What about the first?
The first level? Oh, you guys are good. It's what they called an immortal, the first great immortal of ancient Taoism. They said the first great immortal of ancient Taoism may or may not do anything relative to bodily rejuvenation, because they're completely aware that they are the transcendental light itself, and they may or may not have any motive to do anything about the physical body. So the Taoists always talked about this first great immortal of ancient Taoism. I've only met one being that I think, I've traveled all over the world, and I only met one being that I felt was the first great immortal of ancient Taoism, and that was Adidasam Raj, who spent many years here, just an hour and a half north from here, teaching and blessing and serving people for many, many years. When I first met him, I said, "This is the first great immortal of ancient Taoism."
I've been reading about. Is there information about him in the book?
What's that?
Is there information about him in the book?
I talk about him in the book. I do.
He's no longer alive.
No, he passed out of the body last November. We're coming up on the year anniversary of that time. And I've met some extraordinary people, but he was the first great immortal of ancient Taoism as far as I'm concerned, and I saw so many dramatic healings in his company that were just unprecedented for even for a guy like me who'd been doing the research on it. So yeah, the transcendental diet is the best, but eat your greens.
To what do you attribute his healing power? I mean, you're talking about the healing power of consciousness, and I know something about him and know about his, you know, consciousness studies, but I didn't know that he did healing.
The healing power of consciousness, what you're saying is exactly it. I described two powerful healings in my life in there that he gave to me. I remember a night in Fiji at our ashram in Fiji when he literally just started calling people up. He was sitting on his bed, we were in his bedroom, and he just said, "Anybody needs to be healed," and he just called people up and would heal them of these various things. It was just extraordinary. He went on for a couple of hours.
Moving energy with his hands?
Moving energies, bringing the light down into their body in a very profound way. And of course, that's the virtue of adepts. That's the virtues of the guru. It's the virtues of a teacher, is not just that they give us instruction, is that they can transmit their realization to us. It's the virtue of a good Qi Kung teacher or a good Tai Chi teacher. Well, an enlightened being can also transmit the virtue of their realization to others. And it's not just the thinking thing, and it's not just the talking thing. It affects literal changes in the physics of the body and the world itself. So these great healing stories of Jesus, I don't know if Jesus was a true figure or if he was an historical figure, but ultimately the stories themselves are not difficult to believe. These kinds of things do happen. And they happen all the time, actually. So what does it point to? Points to the profound healing chemistry in the human body. And some of you, if you go back to the earliest written documents that we know about, who knows what the earliest written documents we know about are?
The Vedas.
Exactly. If you go back to the Vedas, go back to the Rig Veda, the first book, the authors of the Rig Veda are going on and on about this substance that confers health, longevity, and even eternal life. Remember the name of it?
Aloe vera.
So. What did he say? Did he say aloe vera?
Yeah.
If you have a burn, I guess aloe vera will be it. Soma, right? Somebody said soma. The soma. And people, I mean, right up to today, people have gone out in search of the magical soma. They said, well, the authors of the Vedas were taking this stuff, and they said it was curing everything, they were living long, and they were even ecstatic when they took this stuff. And people went out and looked, you know, R. Gordon Wasson. Some people might be familiar with R. Gordon Wasson's work. He thought it was the fly agaric mushroom. People have gone out in search of this thing right up till now. Nowadays, they're trying to synthesize it in the laboratory. A couple of months ago, 60 Minutes had a show. Did you catch it on the longevity gene? They think they've got the molecule now that will unlock the longevity gene in the body. I'm still getting spam about this. As of today, I saw it on 60 Minutes, the longevity gene. And you know the substance they think it is? Resveratrol. You probably heard about resveratrol. They're saying we can unlock this and we can unlock the longevity gene. It was Adidas Amraj back in the 70s in the midst of a conference on bodily rejuvenation who said, look, the soma that everybody's looking for, it's in the body itself. The body produces that soma. The endocrine system will produce that soma when all the systems of the body are raised to their highest functioning. And that is pretty much why I wrote that book. And that's when he said, well, it's purification, rebalancing, rejuvenation, and if you do the right thing in each one of those phases, then we begin to unlock and awaken this regenerative chemistry in the body. So that, in one sense, is the whole basis of this book. The soma that our ancient ancestors have been looking for, it's actually produced by the body, and here's how our ancestors used to unlock it. So if you're interested in that, seek no further. You're carrying it with you. Look within, my son. How are we doing? A little more time?
Yes.
Please.
What is your opinion or recommendation or understanding of what Western medicine calls the chronic fatigue immune dysfunction syndrome? Do you have an opinion or an understanding, or if there's anything in that book that is, other than it sounds like basically all of it?
Well, in my own experience, there's two possible causes. One is a viral infection, and we have traced it to the Epstein-Barr virus.
Epstein-Barr.
You had mononucleosis, or what they call in Australia glandular fever.
Yeah,
the virus is there. And even if they tested negative for it, the virus can still be active in the nervous system. And of course, viruses like to hide in the nervous system, come out when you're stressed. Or sometimes it's emotional issues, emotional trauma, emotional shock. All of these things affect the free flow of energy in the body. And when that energy is contracted and constricted, then fatigue can be the result. So in my experience, it can, you know, and this is a kind of summary general conversation, you can trace it to one or two of those things, almost maybe a high percentage of cases.
Anything you can do about it? I mean, I already knew all that. I got all those high
titer
levels.
No,
just, yeah. No, I definitely believe it's, you know, probably all of that based on, you know, blood. They tested the blood, and they for years have told me.
Well, if it's viral based,
yeah.
In my experience, Chinese medicine and even Western herbal medicine can be very effective if you get the right stuff.
Okay.
Because they use, and I've used these in my own clinic for years, the antiviral, there are herbs and combination of herbs that are powerful antivirals. And it's even similar to a kind of therapy they use in China called Fuzhang, which is a standard approach to cancer in Chinese hospitals, where they use certain herbs to treat the actual cancer, and then they have other herbs they use to build up the immune system. And that Fuzhang approach is actually quite effective for viral-based chronic fatigue syndrome that I have seen. So you might want to seek out a practitioner who you know, has some experience in this and might be able to help you out. Yes, sir?
Will you give an example or two of this endocrine fuel you mentioned?
I'm going to miss something up here. Gotu-kol is a pretty good one. I wouldn't exactly call it an endocrine tonic, but it's a good herb. Well, in the Chinese Materia Medica, they talk about Morinda, Epimidium, Eucomia, Eleuthero, Dipsychus, Salaray.
One other thing, this heartbeat business, there's no doubt in your mind that that's true, that there's a maximum, more or less, of beats available in each heart?
I think the principle is totally sound, that if you slow the rate...
So this can be calculated, more or less.
It has been calculated.
And for an individual,
if
you took your heart rate...
Oh, you could calculate your heart rate. But you see, every time you do some breathing exercise, if you did nothing else but lengthen the inhaled breath,
right,
just gently lengthen your inhalation. So that's just slightly longer than your exhalation. You're going to slow your heart rate. And when you do yoga, you know that last pose we do in yoga, hatha yoga, the corpse pose, right? You just lay in that, you're going to slow your heart rate. A good vacation. Just a good vacation. You know, you ever sit on a beach in Maui for a week or two? Amazing. Everybody's symptoms disappear. I know, I've been practicing, been in this alternative medicine thing for a lot of years. They always come back and say, oh, I didn't have to take my medicines. I didn't take anything and I felt great. Right? 5 days later, all the symptoms are back. Just that deep relaxation, it is in some sense the most powerful tonic. I was on a radio show last week, and it was a great question. The lady said, what prescription would you write for Americans if you could write one prescription? So the first thing I gave the diet thing, because I know everybody wants to know diet. So I said, well, greens. Drink your green smoothies. Put lots of organic greens in there and drink them. And then she came back a little bit later and said, what would be the second prescription? And I said, look, if everybody took more quality dropout time, you don't have to go to Hawaii. I do it in my house. I ring, like the gong was rung, I ring a gong Friday about 4. I turn off my phones. And I do nothing till Monday. I just drop out. I might meditate, I might relax, I might listen to music, I might watch a funny movie, nothing dark and bizarre. I just drop out. And by Monday, I feel 20 years younger. If I can get to Hawaii and do it, I feel 30 years younger. But much poorer. I've learned to do it in my health. Somebody, yeah, please.
What about something like atrial fibrillation as far as heartbeats go? What would be indicated for that condition?
Well, it depends on what's causing it. In Chinese medicine, cardiology is actually highly developed. Mm-hmm. And there are various patterns that may account for it. And in my experience, if you get the diagnosis right, you have a very high chance of serving that with the right combination of elements. They've actually been very successful in these kinds of conditions using traditional medicine in China today.
So I've read that magnesium.
Magnesium is a standard, yeah. You should absolutely be, just go get yourself some magnesium. It's like, you know, $12 for a month's supply, and give it a try. Sometimes they put a little taurine in there or something, and it's a great place to begin. But these things can absolutely help, particularly if it's just a problem being caused by deficiencies in the body. I mean, sometimes there are real functional problems that are not so easy to deal with, but if it's just a deficiency condition.
Well, the person I'm thinking of is an athlete who's always been active, and suddenly he's developed atrial fibrillation during a sport like tennis or hiking.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious about it.
He may find some help there. He may. Have we done it? Maybe we have done it. Well, it's been lovely to be able to hang with you people here in this beautiful little store. It's a lovely opportunity. I thank you very much. I hope you'll pick up the book from our friends here and and enjoy it and apply it. And I thank you all very much for your time.
Thanks.
And those of you who haven't heard it before, we have a donation bowl over on the counter. We encourage you to contribute to help maintain this space. We also split that with our speaker so that he, in this case, can support his own work as well. Thank you so much for coming out tonight. We look forward to seeing you again at other events and at the store at the time when you can actually get to the books. Thanks so much.
Okay.